welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca, of course, and my co-host, Michelle Chosudovsky. He edits the website. He co-hosts this program. And, today, as every day, lots of good material on it, brand-new material. Please check it out and take a look. A couple of articles particularly struck me that I read earlier this morning. My guest today is Joel Covell. Joel, for 24 years, practiced psychiatry and psychoanalysis before leaving these professions in January 1988 when he became a social studies professor at Bard College in Annandale, New York. He taught there for 21 years until something happened on February 7th. He was notified then that effective July 1, the day after his current contract expires, it will not be renewed. Why? It has nothing to do with his teaching ability, with his scholarship, with his effectiveness overall. It's because of his activism, because of his courage to criticize Israel, its Zionist ideology, all of the things that we talk about on this program, we've done it so many times. Israel's state-sponsored terror, its decades of lawlessness, some of the worst crimes we know. And listeners to this program know them well because they've heard so much discussion about them. There's another issue at stake as well. What I consider the most important right we have, our First Amendment right, I call it the right, the most important right without which all of the others are at risk. And I brought it up just to read it briefly. It's a few power pack lines. It's got a lot in it, and people can easily forget. But it simply says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, and what's relevant for this program, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. And then it goes on, or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Freedom of expression, of speech, of the press, the right to dissent. This program does it all the time. My goodness, well, they can't fire me because I don't work for anybody. I'm independent. I'm retired. I do this as a volunteer. I guess they could apply pressure if they wanted to. But this is a very sacred right. Lose this and everything else is at risk. Well, it came down very hard on Joel Covell, just like in Chicago months back, last year, I believe, came down very hard on someone I have a little contact with, Norman Finkelstein. DePaul University fired him for the same reason. University of Colorado came down very hard on Ward Churchill, not about Israel, but about his ideology overall. And it's happened to other academics as well. It's happened to members of Congress. One senator I can think of who hardly criticized Israel at all, maybe indirectly. That was Chuck Percy, also of Illinois. But a few congressional people, Cynthia McKinney most recently, twice drummed out of the Congress because she did express honest opinions about Israel. Joel, let me welcome you briefly. Then we have that music says a break. Then we'll come back and we'll get
to the situation. Okay, see you. Okay, look forward to all that.
It's a great honor to have you back on. A big
likewise.
Issue for me.
All right.
Let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll get right into it.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Joel Covell. Joel, let me just mention your book that I guess caused all the ruckus, and we talked about
it. Not all of it, but a lot of it.
that was the one that if they were bothered by other things, then they said, oh my God, well, this is the last straw. Michael, he told the truth. He told too many dirty truths, and we just can't let him get away with that. Well, the book is called Overcoming Zionism, and I sure do recommend it. And I quoted you in two articles that I wrote, and you talk about how Zionism really it's turned into Israel into a machine for the manufacture of human rights abuses. Has it ever?
Right. Well, what I said in that book, I think, you know, it's the whole book, there's a lot of words in it, but I think the words that really triggered the flags of repression, because I remember writing them, I felt, now, Joel, you're going to step over the line, but you do so gladly because it's the right thing to do. The words are, I don't believe in Israel's right to exist, and I don't, and people go nuts when you say something like that, and the press, and, you know, the great majority, really, of institutions in this country assume that you're calling at that point for, you know, the Holocaust to be resumed, and that's a sign just of how deeply penetrated the Zionist propaganda has been in our, you know, national culture. Because when I say I don't believe in Israel's right to exist, I immediately follow it up by saying Israel is a state, a government, which is a contract between the people and their rulers. And no government has an inherent right to exist. And when you say that, you're not saying that anybody has to die or be, you know, tormented or tortured or anything. You're simply saying that there are times when states become obstructions to human rights and abusers of human rights, and they should be replaced by better alternatives. And that's a radical idea, but it's by no means an unusual idea. Often when I've spoken, I turn to the audience and say, now, you know, tell me, friends, where did this notion first really surface in our culture, when that the state has no inherent right to exist? And people are amazing. They don't get it at first. Who, what, who said that? And then I eventually take them out of their misery and say, look, this is Thomas Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence. You read the Declaration of Independence, that's what it's saying. It doesn't use those words, but you
took the words out of my mouth, Joel.
Yeah, well, you would know, but I'm just saying, you know, lots of people are shocked when they hear that, and they say, but I thought you were, you know, calling for Israel to be destroyed, you know, like all the buildings would be burnt down and people would be pushed into the sea or whatever it is. And obviously, that's just fantasy. We're not talking about anything like that. No, nobody has to perish if a state ceases to exist. There are a number of examples in recent history, such as Czechoslovakia in the, you know, in 1989, where nobody was killed and the state changed its form, or even in the more interesting case of South Africa as it overcame apartheid. There were casualties, to be sure. There were mostly black-on-black casualties, which were fomented by the racist government on the way out. But even so, the life loss was really minimal. And we're talking about a process that can be inherently peaceful. But to say that, it's amazing, because it's perfectly sensible and almost routine to have this idea. But to say that in our society, that Israel does not have the right to exist, it brings down the storms, you know, the fires of hell on your head. And I think that's, you know, the main reason I've gotten into trouble. I mean, I go on to say that I don't think any state has the right to exist, but then some states you can single out from the others and say that they absolutely do not have the right to exist. Why? Because they structurally impose human rights violations, chief of which is racism. And I do believe that people of goodwill around the world would agree with that. You know, if a state is fundamentally racist and denies whole class classes and categories of human beings, basic rights, simply because of skin color or, you know, their religion or whatever, that state has to be, you know, put on the list of states that are not fit. You know, and this doesn't just mean Israel. I mean, there are lots of states that are this sort, but Israel has a very special category, obviously, because it's a state whose maintenance and preservation is totally dependent upon the United States. So we bear, and certainly the Jewish community in the United States bears enormous responsibility for what goes on there. So I think that my book, by highlighting that, got me into a great deal of trouble. The book was banned in 2007. And I do believe that the, those kinds of ideas are basically anathema to institutions such as Bard College. Although they deny it, you know, and they have to understand also that it's not like a typical First Amendment case. There's no law being passed. It's a contract that's not being renewed. They probably have the right in court. I mean, it's not been brought to court, but it's pretty tough to argue with the right of contract. And, you know, if the contract expires, either party has the right to not renew it. And they simply say, well, we're not renewing the contract. So the law in this case is probably on their side. But nonetheless, if you look at the particulars of what's gone on there, one is led to the conclusion that I've drawn.
I don't know whether the law is on their side or not, Joel. I'm not a lawyer.
No, I'm not either. We're not testing it at this moment, although I'm not ruling out testing it in court. Right now, it's not being tested in court.
Well, Ward Churchill won his case in court. In his case, I believe they challenged his scholarship, and scholarship had nothing to do with the reason they let him go. But he just won his case.
Yes, he did, and that's terrific. It's a major advance. But you see, it's different because he had tenure, and tenure should give the scholar a great deal of immunity. And in his case, he didn't have that immunity because he said things that were, you know, beyond the pale and considered just wrong to be said. And so he really tested the free speech.
Well, I have the book with the passage in it that 4 years, I believe, after it came out, it got him in trouble.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you could read that passage and say, well, yeah, that's it might be a little extreme compared to the neocon point of view, but you could easily pass it by and not give it a second thought. Because there are lots of comments.
That's the one about 9/11.
Well, 9/11 and the apparatchiks and the government, the apparatchiks in Nazi Germany.
Right.
Well, it's true. I mean, it's absolutely
true.
He
has perfect right to say that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And,
especially
you know,
when it's the truth.
Write a review, challenge them to debate or something like that. Have it out. That's the ideas should be battled. You know, all people should exist, but ideas don't have any inherent right to exist either, just like states, you know. If an idea is bad, it should be contested and driven off the stage.
Oh, indeed. I think what bothers me the most about Israel is that it's a Jewish state first and a nation state second.
Yeah.
And I wrote two articles on Zionism. One, I criticized an L.A. Times article that a man named Judea Pearl wrote, the father what's his first name?
Daniel
Pearl, I'm sorry.
Right.
Daniel Pearl. And, I mean, he made such absurd arguments defending Zionism that I just decided I would answer him.
Good for you.
And I sent it to him, and I was very polite. And I said, well, you know, you got this published in the L.A. Times. I know they wouldn't publish my article because I dare to criticize what you said.
Right. Right.
And even the people that sit on the board of directors of the Daniel Pearl Foundation. And, oh, did I take them over the coals? I mean,
right.
Bill Clinton, who I call an unindicted war criminal,
right.
and Elie
right.
Wiesel, an outrageous self-promoter.
Yeah, don't get me started on him.
Oh, no. I've said a few choice things about him myself. I mean, he's exploited the Holocaust for profit.
Yeah,
to profit and all the rest of the notoriety he's gotten. And journalists who, of course, toe the party line. And these are the kind of people honoring the death of his son. And then he defends Zionism in an indefensible way.
Yeah.
And I mean state fiction instead of talking facts.
Yeah.
Well, he never answered me, nor did I expect him to.
Yeah.
But this bothers me so much. Going back, as you know, far better than I do, Joel, you go back to the birth of Zionism, but really when it split into a militarist side from a more moderate side, and this character, Zev Zabotinsky, oh, my goodness. Well, I guess his ideology was followed from the very beginning.
Well, he's a fascinating character because he is the origins of the right-wing movements within Israel and Zionism. Israel, as you know, our listeners should know, has professed itself to be a socialist and labor-oriented state, and the Labor Party is the, you know, remnant of that in contemporary Israel. However, the fundamental project was grounded in ethnic cleansing because it had to be a Jewish state and also a democracy. You know, it's a little odd and ironic. If it could be a Jewish monarchy, you wouldn't have to have a majority of Jews. You know, you just have to have enough to police the natives, so to speak.
Well, yeah, how could it be a democracy if it's for Jews only?
I mean, it can't be, but I'm just saying that. But they need if they profess being a democracy, which of course they do, that means you're not just, you need an electoral mechanism in place.
Oh,
and the electoral mechanism, you need a Jewish majority. We can take that up after the...
Oh, yeah, we need to take another break. We'll be right back.
Okay, fine.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. I'm on with Joel Covell. We're talking about his status, Zionism. Joel, what bothers us? So many things bother me. My goodness.
Yeah.
We talk about the
world.
Oh, I mean, so much. Just on today's topic, the power of the Israeli lobby.
Yeah.
It is such a major issue. James Petras, who's been on this program several times, he wrote a terrific book.
Yeah.
You know his book, The Power of
Power
the United States.
Sure.
Oh, it's a great book, and he explained.
Hard-hitting.
Oh, it is so hard-hitting. He explained that the power of that lobby just runs right through the landscape of this country. Politics, business, the media, the clergy, academia, professional people, and it marshals its forces for and against whatever it wants.
Yeah.
It doesn't get it all, but it sure gets its share. I think without question it's the most powerful lobby in the country.
Yeah, I think, you know, I like what Jim does in that book. He says, yes, there is a lobby, and the lobby as such is what lobbies do, which is influence Congress. But that he prefers to call it, and I agree with him. I think it's a good move on his part. He calls it the Zionist power configuration, the ZPC. In other words, it's more than a lobby, you know. It's something that includes a lobby, which is, you know, AIPAC and the above book surface, manifestations of influence and coercion. But, you know, it's also, and I would take it probably even further because I used to be a psychiatrist. I think that one of the things we have to deal with is the lobby in the head, so to speak, the way people's thoughts are. You know, are turned in a direction that is pro-Zionist and repressive to all critics of Zionism because of deep-seated fears, and which are manipulated by, you know, propaganda, particularly fears over the Holocaust, and, which, of course, is one of the great nightmares of human history, but it's even more of a nightmare when it becomes manipulated as propaganda for the power of an ethnic the controlled Jewish state.
Joel,
so all these things are, you know, enter into this picture. The lobby itself is you know, like any lobby, it has a certain legality. Although I'd say that actually the Zionist lobbies as such are also illegal because they should register as the agents of a foreign power. You know, there's a, you know, Foreign Agents Registration Act, FARA, which has been on the books since the 1930s.
Oh, indeed.
And they evaded that. So they're actually illegal right from the start. And people should realize that.
They basically can do whatever they want. I think of it as a fifth column.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are a fifth column.
Yeah.
They have invaded this country, and they have such a stranglehold over U.S. policy. And you just sit back for a moment and you say, my goodness, this tiny country of Israel with a population about the size of greater Chicago,
right.
And it can dictate the policy of this country, the world's superpower, the richest country, the most powerful country, and this tiny little country in a far-off corner of the world has the power to dictate our policy.
It sure
dictates a heck of a lot of it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And most of it is bad.
But I want to emphasize something for us and the readers, and listeners, rather. I do believe there's been a big struggle going on, and one reason why there's been a lot of repression is because I think the Zionist lobby is actually in retreat. I want to emphasize that. And you may not agree with me. It may feel its power is total and absolute. And that's a, you know, an arguable position. But I think that the power of the Zionist lobby is waning, in my view. And I think it's because there's a big sea change in the views of Americans, and especially Jewish Americans, and especially younger Jewish Americans. You know, there are seders that are going on in our country now. I'm not observant, so I don't do seders, but I'm, you know, Jewish, but not observant. So.
We're in the Passover season now, so
yeah,
people have to remind me, Joel, I forget.
Yeah, you're not observant.
I'm not observant either.
No, I know. I can't help but being reminded because it just crops up. I mean, but they're observant Jews who are now having Passover, you know, seders where they're reading texts about the Palestinians. You know, they're finding, you know, it's amazing because the whole Passover legend is about, you know, the book of Exodus and the first five books of the Old Testament, and it's about the Jews being in Egypt and escaping thanks to the prophet Moses and, you know, so forth. And of course, historically, we should observe that that didn't happen. There was no slavery in Egypt, and there was no escape. And whoever this historical Moses was, he didn't do the things that he said to have done in the Bible. But that has been a powerful myth and legend, you know.
And he certainly didn't part the Red Sea to do it.
Like Charlton Heston.
Yeah. Charlton Heston did it, but not Moses.
He did a really good job. Maybe he should be applied for the position.
Maybe Charlton Heston is Moses.
But so that whole Passover thing is a little curious, although let us not make a mistake. I mean, the Jews had particularly in Europe, had a really rough time for centuries, and it was no fun, and a lot of really truly terrible things happened, chiefly engineered by the Catholic Church and the Protestant churches, and which is a shame. But so that, you know, that generates the notion that we were unfree, but they weren't unfree in Egypt or Palestine.
Joe, we have to break again. Of course, many
other one. Okay,
history shows that many people throughout history have been persecuted. The Jews are not unique.
Including Palestinians, and that's the point. So the Jews are now reaching out to them, which is so important.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. I'm on with Joel Covell. Joel, in my article criticizing Judea Pearl, at the end of it, I quoted from somebody got hold of a CIA study. Maybe they leaked it to get some information out. But I quoted on a study that they put out, and it said to the effect that they see an inexorable movement away from a two-state to a one-state solution is the most viable model. But they said some shocking things, like they predicted over the next 15 years there'll be an exodus of 2 million Israeli Jews to America.
Yeah.
And I guess for the reason that they're just sick and tired of this stuff, and they just want to get away from it.
And frightened. And, you know,
so, I mean, this may go... This ties in with what you're saying about a waning of the power of the lobby.
Yes, it is. And it's probably the one of the deeper causes of it, sure. It's a major, major development. It's not the only prediction that I've read in this respect, although certainly it's pretty compelling. And actually, Olmert, the ex prime minister, who's a guy one needn't have any regard for, I certainly don't, but he's no fool. He's an intelligent man, and he said, if we don't put through this two-state solution, he said this back in 2007. This is Prime Minister of Israel. If we don't put through the two-state solution, then the world, and especially the people in the United States, are going to start looking at us like we were South Africa. And when that happens, and this is his quote, Israel is finished. He said that.
Is amazing.
It's amazing.
Well,
I believe that it's the demographics are not at all reassuring to a Zionist, and I think accounts for their anxiety and also the sharp increase in repressiveness, because they're flailing around desperately. That's why I think it's really important to keep these dynamics in mind and to press onward, because we have the initiative now. It's striking whenever you speak on this subject. It's a very different kind of audience, and people are willing to hear a considerable degree of criticism of Israel that would have been unthinkable. Noam Chomsky was visiting my school recently, and we were talking. He said that 10 years ago, he said, these things are critical of Israel. They had to have a police, protection for him. This is the most famous intellectual in America. He couldn't speak without police guards. And now he said, you just say it. And everybody says, yeah, of course. And the fascinating thing is, once the balance shifts, it can shift very quickly, because, people are not just... just learning new things, that they're allowing themselves to think things that have been forbidden, So once the taboo is lifted, the thoughts that have been there all along start becoming activated, and that can make changes, very, very quickly.
I agree, and I believe Chomsky has said, and I think this is what the Iranian president Ahmadinejad said, that if Israel does not change its policies, it will end up destroying itself.
Yeah, it's on the way out, no question.
I agree with that.
It can only change its policies if it stops being a Zionist, a Jewish state, and, Jewish-dominated state, and that's the issue. So, in effect, the people like myself and you, I'll say this. I say, listen, I don't have any affection for the state of Israel, but there are, I think that what I'm saying is beneficial for the Jews and the state of Israel, because they're headed for doom as it's going right now. And one of the chief instruments is this out-migration. It's about already 750,000 Israeli citizens who maintain their citizenship but live abroad, chiefly here or in England, but elsewhere as well. And these people also tend to be the more liberal and progressive. And as they move out, the population, the Zionist population of Israel, becomes increasingly composed of two fractions, neither of which should give any Zionist comfort. And one is, of course, the extreme religious right, where particularly the settlers, who, have, among other things, the aim of having as many children as possible. And they're up to about 15% of the population now. And the others are Russian immigrants, many of whom aren't even Jewish, and some of whom are actually anti-Semitic.
Oh, my goodness.
Old-fashioned, Slavic anti-Semitism stuff.
How'd they get in?
Because they're not Arabs. And the Jewish state is, there's money behind them. And the base of this Avigdor Lieberman, who is, clearly question about him is, he a fascist like Mussolini or a fascist like Hitler? You know, that's
about as far to the right as you want to imagine.
Yeah,
he's Israel's new foreign minister.
Yeah,
my
right.
goodness.
But is he Mussolini or Hitler? You know, in waiting. But either, that's not reassuring. That cost them legitimacy. And you're now seeing, and this is, again, very significant, as you're picking up straws in the wind, the Obama administration, which admittedly has been far less than perfect and pretty deplorable in a lot of this stuff, is now girding for a big fight with the Netanyahu-Lieberman crowd. And are they going to... There's a big confrontation coming. I look forward to seeing it with a great deal of interest.
Oh, I hope you're right. I must admit that I have not spotted this. What do you see going on?
I'm trying to remember. There was actually a quotation somewhere. So I'll have to leave it at that because I don't have an immediate grip on the source. But that, namely that, you know, the word has gone out in the upper levels of the U.S. foreign policy apparatus that... we're going to have to take. We're going to have trouble ahead with these Lieberman Netanyahu government, and we're going to have to show them who's boss, basically, and that they can't do the sorts of things they're doing because it would be, you know, it's a. You and I think of Israel as a rogue state, you know, completely lawless, which is certainly the case, but this takes it to a new level, and they're afraid. Justifiably afraid that this could totally destabilize, you know, the Middle East. And the Arab states that have been very compliant are going to put their backs up, partly out of fear from rebellions from their own masses who are very, very restive. Particularly in Egypt, there's now very substantial movements to get rid of Mubarak, who's a U.S. puppet. The advent of... Netanyahu and Lieberman, which is horrible, and I'm not saying this, you know, let's get it as bad as possible and as good. I don't like that kind of thinking, but it is getting as bad as possible, and we have to take it where it is, and where it is I think it's bringing the United States around just to the point where they can override the Israeli lobby. I mean, there's a certain point at which they have to say, listen, fellas, you can get out of my way, you know, we put up with you long enough.
Well, Joel, I have to watch this more closely because what you're saying now is one of the most encouraging things I've heard in a long time.
Well,
I hope this happens. I have a suspicion that maybe the fireworks going on has maybe mostly to do with the rhetoric that comes out of a Netanyahu and a Lieberman.
Yeah.
Because, my God, is the policy all that – I don't know what these guys have in mind, but is the policy all that different from a Livni or an Olmert government or a Barak? I mean, these people are pretty belligerent.
Right. Well, it remains to be seen, you know, but I think I'm sure that the U.S. is acting the way it is, and as I just recently said, in order to remind these guys that they can't go too far because their rhetoric is already way over the top. I mean, Lieberman was quoted as saying, well, if you want peace, prepare for war. The only way to have peace is through war.
What a statement.
What a guy, you know. He's got
what a statement. I mean, Obama wouldn't say. I don't think George Bush would make a statement
no,
like
exactly.
that.
No, exactly. He's the right response to the right of George Bush. If you want peace, prepare for war. So the only time we had peace was after 1967 when we, you know, kicked Arab butt and so on and so forth. And, well, you know, he's... now, you know, they can say, oh, the guy is just talking. In fact, Ehud Barak, who's the defense minister and the remnant of the Labor Party, and actually is extremely unpopular, and in some ways is just as bellicose. I mean, he's reproached Lieberman saying, well, Lieberman's just a talker. He never was in the army. He hasn't killed any Arabs. I mean, look at me. I've killed lots of Arabs. You know? I'm tried and true. I'm trusted commodity.
Oh, indeed. Lieberman was never in the army?
No, he wasn't.
Oh, my goodness, I didn't know that.
He's the other side of him is he's a crook. He has these.
He's a crook, absolutely.
He lives in the damn territories. He lives in an illegal film.
the alliance of the Netanyahu government. I mean, mainly the extreme religious right, Lieberman and Likud, Netanyahu, and then they bring Labor in. They still didn't have enough votes, I guess. They needed one more, so they brought Labor in.
They're in trouble. I'm not going to sit back and watch and wait. I think it's the time for great militants. The Bard thing. I'm trying to put that behind me. You know, because you can't get distracted by these skirmishes. The main event is to build the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, to build cross boundary alliances with anti-Zionists in Canada and in Europe and elsewhere. You know, South Africa, for instance. And just to continue that ideological warfare, because it is having an effect, and of course, put pressure on the Obama administration, and pressure on Susan Rice in the UN. Susan Rice is said to be, our ambassador to the UN is said to be rather unsympathetic towards Israel. I've heard read about that. You can test her on that. There's a big issue coming up now where the UN has called for Richard Goldstone. You know who Goldstone is?
He's a
South African jurist who wrote the definitive reports on crimes of apartheid. He's Jewish. And they've called on Goldstone to investigate human rights violations in Israel during the in Gaza. And here's a major turn of events because the UN has significant numbers now of anti-Zionist people. The head of the president of the General Assembly, Miguel Descoto, is a guy I knew back in the days of we were fighting for the Sandinistas.
Oh, indeed. He's made some powerful statements.
Wonderful man. And he never misses an opportunity to let Israel know, what the score is.
Joel, I try to reach him to his office to invite him on this program.
Oh, great.
I have been able to do it. I spoke to someone in his office, but so far no luck. I mean, he'd be a wonderful guest.
Yeah, he probably would. He probably would out of prudence, would not try.
I must ask you about Goldstone. Do you think he will do a fair and honest job?
Yes, because he did so in South Africa, and because he doesn't have. He's not an anti-Zionist. He's not pro-Zionist, but he's sort of a detached from that. And he's a jurist in South Africa. And it'd be very hard for the Israelis to refuse to admit him to the country. You know, they did this despicable act with Richard Falk.
Richard Falk, indeed.
A friend of mine. Have you ever had him on the program?
No, I have not.
He's somebody you should check out. He's very good. And, he was the UN's rapporteur, and what a disgrace that he went over there to look at the place, and they strip-searched him, kept him in detention for 24 hours, and kicked him out of the country.
Oh, I wrote about it, and I quoted him. I must tell you, I had John Dugard on the program.
Uh-huh.
He was a wonderful guest. Now, he's preparing a report on Gaza. I think it was done,
right,
but it wasn't officially released, and he said he could not talk about it.
Sure.
Until after it comes out.
Well, fair enough.
Which I think is around the end of April or something like that.
Right.
So we talked about his pastime as human rights rapporteur.
Yeah.
And I hope I can get him back again once his report is out, and we'll talk about the most current situation.
Yeah. But the import is that this is obviously a momentum here. You know, Gaza, it's not over anyhow because they're still bombing.
Oh, they're still bombing.
There's still flights, overflights, and they're trying to eliminate the tunnels, which are the only source of life for Palestinians in Gaza.
They're still under siege.
Yeah.
Under siege where people literally are seriously suffering because of that siege.
Right.
And the West puts up with it, and mere tokenism complaining about it.
Yeah. Okay.
And nobody does anything, including Arab states. It really is outrageous.
But we can do something. Civil society, you know what I mean? The masses, the people from below, building alliances cross borders. I mean, there's boycott movements have taken hold. There's been a poll by Israeli manufacturers. Some 90 of them have said that their business has been affected by boycotts.
Well, I wrote an article about the global boycott divestment campaign.
Yeah.
Oh, it's big. It's a big deal, and it has grown. I just have a feeling, Joel, deep down, that Israel made a big mistake in attacking Gaza, at least the way it did it.
Certainly.
An occasional raid, an occasional bombing, that goes under the radar. But 22 days of what they did, that did not go under the radar.
Yeah.
And their officials are in danger of being prosecuted because of this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And should be, obviously. Just
oh, they should be, of course.
Just like our boys should be prosecuted for their torture.
Well, the Spanish court has indicted Bush administration
That's
officials.
Right. Right.
The Spanish government is trying to subvert it from doing anything.
Yeah.
So we really have to wait to see what will happen. But the Spanish court has done what we won't do here.
Yeah, but we're still working on it. I don't know about you guys, but I have friends who, and myself included, working with them with planning actions to put the pressure on. There's a lot of good stuff going on to not, let them get away with it. There is no statute of limitations on war crimes, as you know, and at the very least, we can hound these fellows for the rest of their days, and should, so that every, tin horn dictator or thug knows that there are consequences. And hey, look what happened in Peru yesterday.
Oh, that was wonderful.
You don't get any better than that.
Fujimori, 25 years.
And he's 70 already. So
he's 70. He looked. I saw his picture. He looked older than I remember him way back.
Yeah. No,
well, another lovely character.
Yeah, to help us. But
if it can happen to him,
we got him.
I'll bet you one thing briefly when we come back, Joel. I was April Fooled briefly into believing something that didn't happen.
Oh, I know that one.
John Yo.
Yo,
that's what
he was captured.
And he was arrested in Milan, Italy.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. Again, I'm on with Joel Covell. Joel, I want to let you finish up, but number one, I hope I can get you back to talk about the things you'll be involved in going forward. And I wanted to ask you, what are your plans at this point? Have you got any firm plans?
Well, my firm plans include continuing what I've been doing. I added this journal called Capitalism, Nature, Socialism. This is my other big project, namely Ecological Socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Movement building, trying to build an eco-socialist movement in the United States and around the world.
Oh, amen.
And
amen.
I definitely intend to continue working on the, boycott divestment campaigns and active both in the city and upstate. Working on the Motorola boycotts, which are very, very significant. They're moving along sharply. And, I'm starting to work on another book. I continue writing. I most dearly hope to write. I have quite a bit more yet to say, and I want to use these years of my life where I may have some free time to do that. Try to stay above board. Above water. I'm always above board, but above water.
We both have a lot of productive years.
Yeah, there's a lot to be done, and I feel that just the best way to stay young and healthy is to feel that you're part of history and changes for justice. So that's Dr. Covell's recipe for the health and longevity, and I just continue to keep going. I'm trying to build with a colleague here kind of an ecological environmental ecological justice movement in New York City and become sort of like a training director for that. It's a great deal to do.
Maybe come on back and let's talk about that on a future
I'd like to talk about that side of things. I actually, over recent life, have spent more time on that issue than I have on the Zionist issue.
Is there a website to go to on that?
Well, this is joelcovell.org, which one of my weaknesses is I'm not too good about publicity and organizing myself and all that. But I intend to build that website, but you can already get a sense of what I've written. And that's joelcovell.org. For this particular struggle is the CODZ.org. That's Committee on Open Discussion of Zionism, CODZ.org. And my case in Bard and other cases of similar forms of repression are, mentioned there. So I certainly intend to continue working on that. I mean, not about my case on Bard. That's not going to last. I mean, I don't intend to return. And the school would have to transform itself to have me return. I wouldn't want to be anywhere near it, frankly. That's not going to happen. So I'm looking forward to, a pretty busy life. But, of course, the world is very, very unstable in every which way. We live in incredibly difficult and dangerous times that none of us can predict how it's going to turn out, except that we're in a lot of trouble. So,
Joel, we talk about it all the time on this program, domestically, abroad, and it really is grim and very worrisome. And
very worrisome.
We sure better figure out a way to change the way we're going, because heaven help humanity if we don't do it.
The
idea of eco-social, the present system is broken. It doesn't work.
That's
we
fact.
Should recognize that, scrap it, and let's have a new system, anything other than what we have now.
Right, and it's showing its disintegration every day, and now is the time for massive social
movement. Indeed. Joel, I've got to interrupt. That music means they're going to break away. I just have time to thank you for coming
All
on.
All right, well, it's lovely.
Come on
to
back, and let's continue this on eco-socialism and the rest.
Very basic stuff. So great to talk to you again. And
thanks,
luck.
Joel.
Okay.
And I repeat, tomorrow live program again on Monday. Join us.
Bye-bye.